This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
This week in Los Angeles, a thief walked into a luxury hotel and walked out with a valuable sketch by Rembrandt. The artwork was said to be worth $250,000. Now, the story has a happy outcome for the owners of the artwork because the police quickly recovered it and arrested the alleged thief. But here's what's remarkable. This was the 82nd documented theft of a Rembrandt in the past century. That makes the Dutch master's work the most stolen art of any artist in the world. Why? Why Rembrandt?
It boils down to something very simple, which is everybody's heard of Rembrandt. It's a household name. You know, you're called a Rembrandt if you're a good artist. It's sort of hard not to know that the name Rembrandt stands, you know, among the finest artists in history.
So that's Tom Mashberg, who might know more than anybody about stealing Rembrandts. In fact, he's co-written a book called Stealing Rembrandts, The Untold Stories of Notorious Art Heists. They're all in here, including the most notorious, the unsolved 1991 heist from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum in Boston, in which thieves entered the museum, bound the guards with duct tape, and stole a number of artworks, including three Rembrandts. Tom Mashberg says that art theft, like most of them, could have been avoided.
Rule number one for a guard in any museum or any other setting for that matter is don't let anyone in. And really, that is as simple as it gets. Don't let anyone in and, you know, you solve 80% of your art heist problem. Well, unfortunately, these guards did let these men in and the museum was very badly robbed.
And it was that theft that prompted Tom Mashberg, a reporter for the Boston Herald, and his co-author, Anthony Amore, who now runs security at the Gardner Museum, to investigate the long history of Rembrandt thefts. I met Mashberg recently at the Worcester Art Museum, the scene of another Rembrandt heist back in 1972. We talked about that and about who steals art.
By and large, the typical art thief in general and the typical Rembrandt art thief is a low-rent criminal, a guy who's familiar with home invasions and maybe armed robberies of convenience stores and gas stations, who's never really had any interest in art and really has no clue that the thing they're stealing is almost impossible to move on the black market.
Well, Tom, we're here in the Worcester Art Museum, which is a beautiful museum, but we came here because this was a scene of a theft in which a Rembrandt was stolen. It was recovered. We're sitting right in front of it. It's a portrait of St. Bartholomew. It was stolen back in 1972, and this was the first art theft, you write, in which a gun was used and actually fired. What happened?
The guy who planned it was a very local criminal in fence named Florian Munday, who actually had some affection for the painting he stole because he had grown up in a household where art was discussed and he had actually studied a few semesters of art in college, which sort of sets him apart from the average character. His mistake was that he hired this crew of inept criminals who were the gang who couldn't steal straight and who messed everything up from the get-go.
And you described some great examples. For instance, they came in here with ski masks to cover their faces, but they started talking to people on their way in without their faces even being covered.
Exactly. I mean, they strode right through this room, and there were a couple of young ladies sitting on these benches right here where the public sits, and one of them sort of puffed his chest up and said, "We're here to steal a painting," you know, as if this was a, something you would announce out loud.
And then you write that they simply pulled the paintings off the wall and strode out toward the exit where they had a confrontation with a guard, and that turned ugly.
As they ran out of the museum with the four paintings that they had stolen, including St. Bartholomew, they ran across the giant Antioch mosaic that has signs around it that says, you know, do not step. Instead of obeying those signs and sort of skirting the perimeter to get out the door, they, you know, clumsily with their ski masks on and their big bags on their backs go charging across the mosaic. So this courageous guard spots them and he says, "Hey, you can't step there." And the next thing you know it, they're on top of him and he's trying to grab them because he sees that they have these paintings. So there's a little bit of scuffling going on, and as a result of this, one of the criminals pulls the trigger and hits the guard kind of near his spine with the .22.
Unfortunately, he recovers. It wasn't a serious injury. They get away, but eventually the painting is recovered. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here right in front of it.
Because the heat was on because of the shooting, Munday had to hide the painting in a drop ceiling in his apartment for several days. And he scurried around trying to figure out how to get rid of this painting, how to maybe, you know, get some value for it on the black market. And he put it in a trunk and he took it to a pig farm in Rhode Island where he hid it in a hayloft. Well, anyway, sometime within a week or so after Munday and his gang stole the painting, some local mobsters pulled up alongside Munday as he was walking down the street, tossed him in the car and said, "We want that painting." And Munday figured that the jig was up. You know, these guys were going to take the painting and kill him. He led them to the pig farm. They recovered the St. Bartholomew, and threw Munday back in the car. He was sure it was over. They were going to dump him by the side of the road, and lo and behold, they dropped him off near his home and said, "Okay, we're done with you."
That's amazing. So now the painting is in the hands of local mobsters. What happened then?
Well, they figured they could ransom the paintings back to the museum for a reward or finder's fee, so they contacted a local attorney. He reached out to law enforcement, and they arranged for a swap. Instead, they were all rounded up and arrested, and they all ended up doing jail time.
So it really is one of these cases that you mentioned earlier of the gang that can't steal straight. I mean, it's almost comical.
Many of these thefts have a very farcical component to them, largely because what you end up having at the end of the day is kind of this Coen Brothers scenario where guys who really have no idea how valuable the art is or how to preserve it are driving around with it, hiding it. What they've done is they've basically kidnapped something. You know, kidnapping is a scenario that rarely works out for criminals. They end up with something they can't really move on the black market.
Do any of these thefts, in your research, did you learn if any of these thefts actually pay off?
It's very rare for these thefts to pay off. Often what happens is the criminals become so frustrated by their inability to profit from the art that they'll drop it off at a train station or a public place and call the police and say, "You might want to go pick this up." For the most part, these guys wind up with long jail terms, really nothing to show for it other than just a longer criminal record.
Now, in writing this book, you interviewed a number of art thieves, including Florian Munday, who was responsible for the heist here in Worcester. What did you learn from these guys?
One of the things we learned is that this area around Boston and Massachusetts is actually one of the most heavily hit regions in the world when it comes to art theft. And that's largely because there are so many good early museums here and so many impressive works of art by American masters and Hudson River masters. And many of them are in the possession of, you know, small museums, even colleges, where they just don't have the wherewithal to secure them. One of the main things we learned from Munday was that for the longest time, Munday and a couple of other criminals were well aware of how vulnerable art was in Massachusetts and New England, and they had identified many places where they felt they could easily just walk in, steal a painting, and walk out with very little resistance.
Of course, the greatest unsolved art heist in the world remains the theft of 13 works, including 3 Rembrandts from the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. With the recent capture of Whitey Bulger, there's been a rumor around and a belief among some that he's responsible and that now he's in custody. Maybe we're at last going to get to the bottom of this heist. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like I disappoint a lot of people, but I feel very strongly, based on a lot of experience in reporting, that Whitey Bulger had nothing to do with the crime, never was anywhere near the art, and would have no opportunity to be involved in its recovery. You know, Whitey Bulger was basically an extortionist and heroin dealer. That's what he did. That was his comfort zone, and he didn't stray from that. And the people who stole art were taking part in a subspecialty that really didn't interest Bulger. So while it would be a nice, neat ribbon on top, as it were, to have not only capture Whitey, but then get the recovery of the paintings and solve all of these terrible mysteries that have afflicted Boston. I think we're going to be waiting some more time for the Gardner art to come back.
Well, it's a mystery that will remain, I guess, at least for a little longer. Tom Mashberg, thanks so much for talking to us about stealing Rembrandts. Fascinating conversation and fascinating subject.
Thanks for having me.
Tom Mashberg is co-author with Anthony Amore of Stealing Rembrandts, The Untold Stories of Notorious Art Heists. You can find more information on our website, radioboston.org.